Would you like to learn how to build out a multi-million dollar operation and be able to do that time and time and time again? Well, you're certainly going to want to listen to this episode of the Just Grow podcast if you answered yes to that. Today, we have Minky Brady on for this episode of the Just Grow podcast. Minky has an incredible story on how she literally went homeless when she was 19 and then became a millionaire by the time she was 24. On top of that, she just has a wealth of business knowledge and an incredible human being. So you're gonna wanna make sure and watch this entire episode. Now, before we jump into this episode, wanna make sure that you know about the Just Grow Visions project that we have been working on for a little over 9 months now. It is literally the expedited charter jet version of building your dreams. Most people try the commercial, stress-free, long way to their dreams and goals. This is the expedited version, and we have a free video training over on our website, justgrowvisions.com. So feel free to go check that out to learn how you can manifest your dreams 10 times faster. So without further ado, let's jump in this interview with Minky Brady.
Well, Minky Brady.
Yes.
Welcome to the Just Grow podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks
I'm excited
for
this because I've heard you share your story a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to hear it like directly from you.
Okay.
It's an inspiring story, and then I want to get into just a lot more of what you're doing right now and what your mission is. We met recently,
mm-hmm.
and I get a very quick vibe from people.
Okay.
I'm an empath. I get people real quick, and I get a real sense that you're a real people's person, and you're about impact, which I am as well. So I want to get into all that as well.
I love it. I'm an open book.
Cool. Well, yeah. How did you get into entrepreneurship?
So both of my parents are entrepreneurs. They're both multimillionaires on their own. So I joke, I was bred to be an entrepreneur. I think it was in my like breeding and who I am and kind of just all I knew growing up. So I started out when I was 17 years old. I graduated high school, went straight into the fitness industry and coaching. So I've been coaching since I was 17 years old. I was actually the youngest trainer that Gold's Gym ever had. Worked my way up the corporate ladder. I knew that I wanted to dedicate my life into helping people. And then come 21 years old, decided to start my own company. And this is again, after getting divorced at 19, living in my car for a month and starting from zero. And so, you know, there's a lot that happened during that time, but ultimately at 21 years old, corporate started to put limitations on what I couldn't say and do with my clients. And I realized that, you know, my relationship with my clients is why I became a coach. Like you said, I'm a people person. That personal connection is why I became a coach. So started my first personal training company at 21, made $125,000 my first year, doubled my income every year after that, became a millionaire by the age of 25. And that was all through my social media presence and sharing my story online. And so that got me into what I do now with social media strategy and marketing and helping other service-based businesses duplicate the results that I was able to do at such a young age in a fraction of the time.
Yeah, that's, wow, that was quick.
Yes.
What was it like? I want to kind of dive into the time where you became homeless,
mm-hmm.
sleeping in a parking lot of a Walmart,
yes.
for a month. Like, yeah. What was your psyche back then?
Honestly, I mean, I used to say that was the lowest point of my life. Since then, I've obviously had a son who was in the NICU for a month, and any NICU parent out there, I will undoubtedly say it was a lot more challenging going through the NICU for a month than it was living in my car.
I'm sorry, NICU.
NICU, newborn intensive care unit. So okay. My son was born at 3 pounds.
Wow.
Average of babies are anywhere 6 to 10, right? So he was very, very little, and this was during COVID. And so it was very, very trying during that time. And so I am definitely the close second is living in my car. I mean, especially at that time, like you're raised by your family. I was raised by a very religious family, and that's all you knew was your parents and everything. I had gotten married to who they wanted me to get married to. I had done everything I was supposed to do at that point in my life. And then when it all fell apart, you know, the part about that story is I actually chose that. I had an opportunity to go back to that life, but it no longer served me. And it's not what I wanted. And so the choice that I made was to not go back to it. It's, you know, it strained the relationship from my family. I got disowned, had nowhere to go, had no money. I had to start over. And it was one of those key moments in life that I'm like, I'm choosing who I want to be. I'm choosing what my life's going to look like. And so as much as it was really, really hard, there was that glimpse of hope. And, you know, the biggest glimpse of hope was actually getting a Doberman puppy during that time. I had already purchased him. a year before, but then they had called me and they're like, hey, he's ready to go to his new home. So I drove to Idaho, and that's actually what got me out of my car, is giving my puppy a home. Mm. So really, I would say motherhood is the thing that has always gotten me through life, whether that was to my dog or to my son that I have now.
Wow. Because yeah, now you're responsible for more than you.
It feels bigger, like a bigger purpose. Like we all know, like, okay, we want to help people. We want to do bigger things. Our purpose is to serve the world, right? That's true and that's great, but it's hard to see when it's not directly in front of you all the time versus when you have a being living with you that you are responsible for, the game changes, right? This is who I'm responsible for. This is who I'm supposed to help and who I'm supposed to serve for my life. Like I've already committed to them. And I realized, you know, I committed to be his mom. And of course, you know, I paid an exuberant amount of money for this Doberman puppy. And when I went up there, I actually had first pick of the litter, and my plan was to sell the dog to get out of my car. And then I saw this runt who couldn't walk, and I asked what was going to happen to him, and they said that he's going to die, he's not going to make it. They weren't even trying to feed him anymore. And that's, of course, the puppy that I chose, is because he represented the version of me at that time. And so I chose that puppy, way overpaid $2,500 for this little thing that was probably not even going to make it and struggling to even walk. And, you know, it was sad. Like, the situation I got him from, I didn't know how bad it was. I mean, he smelled so bad with feces, I couldn't even drive from Idaho to Utah. Like, I had to go wash him in a Maverick sink to try and get him clean and just smelling enough that I could have him in the car. And he just sat on my lap, and I had a manual car at the time, and he just sat on my lap the whole time and, like, didn't even move. And I let him out to go potty, and he just didn't want to move. Like, you could just tell he had been so traumatized, and it was in that moment that I'm like, okay, I have a reason to live. I have a reason to keep going, even if it's just the dog at this time.
That's, well, first I was going to say stick shift.
Yes, I can drive manual.
I love stick shift.
My dad owned a dealership growing up, and he always told me, he said, the coolest cars are always manual. And I loved cars. So exactly. He's like, learn how to drive manual, which actually served me on mine and my husband's first date. Because the car that he drove, he had the new Corvette Z06, and it was sexy. But he's like, you can't drive it. It's a manual. I was like, oh, sucker.
I remember you sharing
that. I've been preparing for this day.
Got him. Wow. Well, I mean, beyond just like having another being to be committed to, and I think that's the word that I heard, is like that commitment. Because that's a big thing that I've noticed lately, is that like there's a lot of lack of commitment.
You have no idea.
Entrepreneurship space, but then as a whole.
Do you feel like that's in a gender specifically, or do you feel like it's pretty even keel across the board? You can be honest.
I think it's even keel. I think you're referring to like.
I'm 100% referring to women right now.
Well, I'm saying like even, you're saying like to relationships, correct?
No, I'm referring to women in the entrepreneurship world. Oh, okay. I have seen more laxation in the women entrepreneurship world than I ever have before. And I get it. It's tapping into the energy. Like I even saw a post that was like, it was like, do not get caught up in the end the year strong. Let's do this. You can hit your goals this year. If you're not feeling it, you just hone into that, honey. You just take a step back and you hone on it and you focus on your energy and you do what serves you during this time. And I get where they're coming from. But, and this was like a big influencer and like big people that have like podcasts that were posting. I'm like, are you kidding me right now? Because to me, that's just a lack of commitment. It's never convenient. It never feels good. Right. But yes, if you're committed to a bigger purpose, you need to end the year strong because you committed to helping people in a bigger way. Does that make sense? So yeah. I would agree with you. And I do think that even, you know, it's the holidays. Yeah, it would be very convenient just to not do anything.
Well, I guess like even without even seeing that post, I guess where my mind goes is maybe that's even the conversation around the masculine versus the feminine energy, and just more so letting it flow and letting things come in, which it's such an interesting topic because it's like, where is that balance of like, what do they call it? Spiritual bypassing, where you're just like, you can just, let anything go and just say like, I'm just letting it flow versus being the person that actually like goes after stuff. And I think it really is that balance of like where. And I was talking with a friend of mine the other night, is like, I think personally, and I love your feedback on this, but I think the balance always comes back down to intention. It's like, what is your intention moving forward? And then are you present in that moment? But
what do you mean by intention?
So if your intention was, let's say you had the intention to set a goal and you were going to make $1 million this year.
Okay.
And then you just decide to this conversation of like this, they saying, oh, just let it go. Well, if your intention was to do it, then you continue with that intention and move forward to that, whatever that looks like.
And so I agree with that, because that last sentence is whatever that looks like. Because sometimes, like, you can't control everything. And I think entrepreneurs are a little bit control freaks. We kind of have to be that way, right? Because that's the next step, is growing a team and letting go of that control. Mm-hmm. But I would say, you know, something, you do have to learn that some things are out of your control, which is, like you said, being flowy, being like, you know what? Cool, calm, and collected. Like, I trust in God. I trust in manifestation. I trust that this is going to work out. But where is that balance with the hard work and tenacity that I will make this work out versus I am stepping back and I am allowing to work this out? That's where I think people blur the lines, and that's why people aren't successful. Mm-hmm. That's why they're like, well, I just don't feel like it. It's not convenient to be an entrepreneur, a successful one. And I'm talking like multiple six figures, seven figures level. It's not convenient. I was speaking at an event that we met at, and someone asked me, they're like, hey, what's the balance like? What's a balance between a personal and a professional life? And the truth is, it just depends how fast you want to scale. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that, you know, you should sacrifice a personal life. You should sacrifice a family to scale. But at the same time, I would rather make the sacrifice now than when I have three kids and I want to be able to spend more time with them. So when do you want to make the sacrifice for ultimately what your intention and your goal was?
Yeah. I like that. I'm glad you brought that up, because the question that I often ask a lot these days, whether that be clients or just conversations, is what is your main priority right now? And I think that's maybe even, I kind of retract and go back to what I was talking about before about being intentional, is like, what is your priority? Is your priority to chill and enjoy the holidays? Then that's fine. That's your intention. If your intention is to build a multiple seven-figure business, then that's your intention. That's where you should be pouring your energy.
And I think that's where people struggle to be honest of what their priority is. Like, I work with people, I mean, I have 150 active clients right now that I'm working with them in their businesses. There's a lot of conversations. If I'm having to beg them to get things done, that's the exact conversation. What's your priority? Is it this or is it this? Because if your priority is not the same as when you first started our program, that's the level that my priority and commitment level is. So if it's not, that's fine, but we need to be honest with this and we need to reassess our goals, because it does come down to priority, because you will have time in every area, whether that's the priority or not.
Right. So you talked about, you said the words manifestation, flow.
Yes.
Sounds like you're lighting up with that. So I want to hear more. Like, so when you were in that phase, when you were 19 and you were having the challenges, did you have like the intention and did you have the vision that you were going to be a millionaire at 25?
Absolutely not. But I had enough hope of who I did want to be one day. I didn't think it was possible. I will say it was actually my husband, when I met him, that he brought that inside of me. Like, I had it in me. He just helped unveil it, is like what I like to say. But I mean, like, there's a lot of things that happened during that time. Like, I was living on a mattress on the floor on the roughest part of town. I got really dragged into some bad stuff for about 9 months. Like, I had an opportunity to do prostitution, all those things. And like, I think a lot of women have those opportunities where you're beautiful and it's like, you have a good body and you're beautiful. I was a fitness model at the time. I'm like, hey, I can get myself out of a situation that fast. And it is incentivizing as a woman of like, okay, how easy would that be? And I remember the moment that I had to make the choice whether I was doing it with my friends or I wasn't. And it was at that point I said, I don't know what my life brings, but I choose to not let this be my story. And if that is someone's story, that's great. I'm like, glad if you're getting out of it and all the things. But I knew that that would be a point in my life that I would be telling myself that this is, that I wasn't meant for more. And it was that decision that I would feel, would honestly say that I manifested that this isn't what my life was going to be. And I busted my ass working long hours, knowing that I could have an easy way out, but that ultimately wouldn't be manifesting the life that I wanted. And then it was like, God, it was like 3 months after that that I met my husband.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think, if you had to say, like, what was it that took you down the path that you went versus the path that you easily could have gone, that was, could have been the quick money and what I know. A lot of girls probably go through.
A lot of girls do that. And it's nothing against them. It's just something that I don't think my identity would have had an easy time overcoming. Like, I struggled with suicide all growing up. I probably could guarantee you I'd end up suicide, like, with that path. Like, it just didn't serve me. Honestly, I think it was hope. It was that hope and that vision of a life I could have, and that I knew the conversation I didn't want to have with my husband. And that it's like, would a guy that I want in my life, would he want a woman who would think this lowly of herself? And although, you know, I felt like everyone else around me didn't love me and I didn't have anyone to connect with, I knew in that moment that I had enough love for myself that wasn't going to be the choice. And like, I remember that moment, like, I was sitting on my girlfriend's couch and like, she didn't get it, because that's what she was doing to provide for her and her kids. And like, she didn't get it. And I remember feeling that way. I'm like, this is not what I was meant to be. Like, this is not it.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of times it comes down to like, really, I think the thing that's helped me the most is, especially as of late, is just like really knowing who I am. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I hear.
Yep.
Like, you know who you didn't want to be.
Yep. That's pinned it. Yep. I didn't know quite who I was yet, but I knew who I didn't want to be. And I think too, like, being disowned, being cut out from a religious family and having a lot of terrible things said about me and done, that I was like, you know what? I'm not going to prove them right that I'm the problem. I can be the solution. I can be the solution for my life. And now it's been a great solution for my family's life. Like, I've been very, very close to my family since then. And I feel like been a breath of fresh air, that now it's like, my siblings are the one that comes to me when they're like struggling with stuff, or like they get a tattoo or anything, and they're like, Minky, I have to tell you this. And it's like, I feel like I gave permission for them to show authentically up themselves. And so it does kind of come to fruition. But yeah, I would 100% say that, like, when it comes back to identity, that was the main reason.
Well, it's, you know, something I come back to a lot is, you know, a lot of people say that like, life is hard, mm-hmm. or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very true. Mm-hmm. It just depends on where you want the hard.
Yep.
Because you made a very tough decision in the beginning when that was very hard.
Yep.
And now you're reaping the rewards because of that. Mm-hmm. And now your family's coming to you, mm-hmm. as if it could have been the opposite. And I think that's what a lot of people choose. And I think that's the thing that I just notice a lot, is people choose the easy life early and then live with a lot of regret, meaning the heart is on the back end.
Yep.
When they're constantly looking back, like, oh man, I shoulda, coulda, woulda.
Mm-hmm. And you're right. Like, when it comes to choosing the heart, like, I was working 60, 70 hour weeks. I was getting another job as a bartender because I was still working for corporate. And I ended up buying my first home at 19 years old. And the reason why I was able to do that, from living in my car, I believe it was a 10-month span from living in my car to buying my first house. I made those choices and I chose that's what my life was going to be, and that was my heart. And like, my husband even told me, he's like, I'll be honest, I don't know if I would have wanted to date you if like you were still living in that situation you were, if I didn't see who you were and the woman that you were becoming, right? And so I chose my heart, which then ultimately attracted my life partner. But if I wouldn't have chose that, like, I wouldn't blame him. Like, I'm living in the ghetto part of town, just got out of living out of my car. He was successful doing his company, of course. Like, I am not on the same level as him, but he saw my work ethic and my tenacity and my spirit and my passion for what I did, and it just worked. And it was actually attending my first event where I did figure out my identity, and I actually got taken through a meditation that changed my entire life. And it was, you know, it's called the Strength Walk, and he walks you through a meditation where you're like walking out of a ledge, and then you see someone standing on the ledge. And then when you turn this person around, they're supposed to be your highest self. Well, for me in that moment, when I turned the person around, it was my lowest self. It was my darkest being. And I felt a separation that day from my darkest being to my highest self, and that I was able to leave everything with that being in that meditation. Like, I broke down and cried. Like, I dropped to the ground. Like, it was very like physically and emotionally just overwhelming. But it was that moment that I was like, okay, this is the separation of who I get to be. And I think that's what we struggle with as humans, is like our past being our identity instead of allowing it be our story of where we got to where we are.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you were there when James Top Dog Mm-mm. shared this quote. He said, share your scars, or share your share your scars, not your wounds.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't, that kind of related, but
yes.
Yeah.
And it's the way you share it and the way you view it. Do you view it that it got you to where you're at? Mm-hmm. Or, and that's the thing, like perception is everything. How do you view it? Like I view that I've had a long, very successful career in coaching, which ultimately got me into helping businesses duplicate what I want, right? And what I have done with my companies, I help people duplicate those results. Other people could look at my history and they're like, oh, she's not doing training anymore. She wasn't doing the personal training, so she went to social media, right? It's all perception, and that's what I help a lot of business owners do. And I'm like, your stories, whether they're failures or successes, they build on top of each other for your brand story, not it's your past that you try to erase. I meet so many people, especially with social media, they're like, oh, I'm doing this now, and they try to erase everything that I did. I'm like, why are you hiding? Why can't we just accept your identity and what you have done, good or bad, for what it is, and build on top of that instead of constantly tearing things down? Because how do you ever expect to build higher if you're not building things on top of each other?
Interesting. So you always recommend everybody just keep everything that they posted on.
100%. Just build on top of it instead of continuously tearing it down.
Yeah.
Because it's a evolution, right? It's not a reshift. That's the thing that people struggle with, like with rebranding. It's an evolution of your brand. You're not just completely building up a new brand and a new business and a new identity. Everything should be centered around you, and it's all an evolution. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think it comes back to the whole conversation of being authentic.
Mm-hmm.
You're like showing who you truly are. It's not like, you, okay, let's forget about that person. And then it's just like, you were this ultimate mogul from the start.
So it's my favorite quote, to know them is to love them. It's actually one my mom taught me growing up, is to know them is to love them, funny enough.
Mm.
That, and it's true. It's like to let people see all your sides of you, you're allowing them to know you, which is ultimately how they will love you. Even with like people struggle, they're like, I don't want to put my kids on social media. I don't want to share this side. I don't want to share this side. I'm like, that's fine. But I'm letting you know, we live in a day and age where people want to know more sides of you. They want to trust you. And I get it. There are terrible things that happen with kids and pictures online. I totally get it. But I would rather place the narrative online, because if people want pictures of my kids, they can show up to the park. Right? And so it's like, I would rather place the narrative, and I would rather put things out there and be authentically myself and show up online, which is funny. People are scared to show up online because they're like, okay, what are people going to think about me? But the truth is, if you don't post anything, you're allowing them to set their own narrative. You're allowing whatever people say about you to set your own narrative. My social media presence and my brand will hold up me and my reputation better than anything I could ever say or anything anyone else could ever say. So the same reasons people are scared to show up on social media is the reason why they have to, and they could actually protect themselves and actually give an opportunity for the world to love them and show who they are, right? If people talk shit on me, that's fine. They're going to go look at my page and they will know exactly who I am, exactly what I'm about and what I stand for.
Let's go back to manifestation.
Okay.
What does that mean to you?
I would say bringing it into existence.
And how does one start that process?
Honestly, I would say taking the time to enter into your highest being and then actually visualizing it. We're highly visual people. We have a huge board in our bedroom that has like our goals together, our goals separate, and they're all pictures all over the board. We have their identity, and then we have actually our tangible goals. So with our identity, it's pictures of me in the states that I would like to emulate, right? So like, if I want people to really see me, and I'm trying to take on the identity of being a better leader, that was my goal this year, was being a better leader, because I have 20 people under me, right? So I'm like, I wanna be a better leader. And so you put a picture on your board that's of me being a leader, me speaking on stage, me talking to my team. And then when someone says, hey, Minky, you're doing great, you're a great leader, then I get to take it down and I've achieved that, because people are actually noticing that I'm emulating that, right? And then with the tangibles, like we put up everything that we're wanting, even to like, you know, wanting another house in Arizona. Or even what's funny is when me and Travis were dating, my husband, he had a picture of a man and a woman walking on a beach. And it said, marry the woman of my dreams. And I saw it on our first date. And what's so funny is I went, when we actually were getting married, it was obviously on his board until we actually get married. I went to go pick out my wedding dress, and mermaid style wedding dresses are really tight. I always wore those high school. Like that was my dream dress, was a mermaid dress. So I only tried on those. And then one of my girlfriends joked, she's like, you need to put on a ball gown. I'm like, hell to the fucking no. And I put it on and I was like, oh my God. I was like, this is the dress I'm going to get married in. And I started crying and I'm like, I don't know why I have to wear this dress. So I ended up getting a huge ball gown that had a 12-foot cathedral length train, like the biggest princess ball gown. And I got home and it was nearly the exact dress that was on that boy's board. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like, you realize you chose my wedding dress, right? Like, I only get a few things that I get to choose with this. And it was, I think it was programming from that, you know? And I ended up getting two dresses, because that's me, with like, for the reception of what I wanted. Oh, I know. Well, it was cool. It was actually like the train came off of it so I could have the big ball gown for the wedding. And then I had like the fun mermaid style for the reception. So it worked out great. But it's been crazy things like that. Or even like, he had never left the country or been to Hawaii when I met him. So Travis had like he said, he had chose his heart. He had always said no to traveling. He had always, like, when friends just wanted to go out in his 20s, when he was hustling through high school, he always said no. So a lot of the things on his board were like traveling things too, because he eventually wanted to do that. And on his go to Hawaii, I booked our honeymoon and it was the exact same resort. And I had no idea that he had on his board. And we've had like crazy things like this happen. Like, it's just crazy how things come into existence of like what you manifest. And I believe in that. Like, you put it out there to the world. And when you're constantly seeing it every day, you're programming yourself to bring that in. And whether that's God bringing it for you or whether you're bringing it to fruition yourself through your subconscious programming, I mean, I think it's a little bit of both.
Yeah. So what's the big vision right now?
Honestly, the big vision is starting to phase me out of the company. Mm-hmm. I think we had talked about that. You're like, what's the priority right now? And you know, people are like, oh, I want to do that. That would be great to semi-retire. I can't say retire because God knows I can't stop. But you know,
can any real
I know stuff? It's true. You know, the goal right now is we have built our team. We're bringing on, honestly, probably 8 more people before the middle of next year. And so, like, the vision now is training up team members and leaders within my company. And so that's, like, been the big focus. And it's, like, and there's obviously the little things, like, we're getting a horse property, 2.5 in Arizona with horses and all the things. Like, we have our horses, but actually having them on our property and the new car, like, all these things are coming. But like, as far as like business goals, these goals are just to be a better leader, to bring on more people so that I can semi-retire and actually have another kid. Cause that's the hard thing with, you know, I am glad I started having kids, but I'm also looking at my kids almost 3. I'm like, how far apart do I want my kids' age gap? Do I want to keep doing the baby thing, or like, do I want them to be 8 years apart, right? And so I feel the clock ticking there where I'm like, okay, I need to get things in place where I can walk away. I did not have anything nearly in place where they should be when I first had my kid. Like, I was not prepared. And it was hard. Like, we almost got divorced. Like, it was a struggle. And so I'm trying to replace that right now so that I can fathom having another kid.
Yeah.
And then do like a kid entrepreneurial book series that I'm writing and different projects like that ultimately fuel the mission, but then where I'm best served. And I think that's where business owners have to look at. Like, people are like, oh, that's great, I would want to do that. And I'm like, okay, but you have to hustle for a lot of years to get to that point, right? It's been a lot of years hustling doing this. That being said, it's like, what's going to still fuel the mission? I'm best served speaking. I'm best served connecting with people. Like you said, I'm a people person. Like, that's what I love to do. That's what I'm really good at. I'm best served just getting paid to speak, not one-on-one, day-to-day with the clients. And I love coaching the clients, but it will probably be to the point where it's only 6-figure clients or above, meaning they've invested 6 figures with my company or above, so that at that point, it's worth my time to coach them. Other than that, I will coach my coaches under me to coach all the other clients. So that's the ultimate vision.
So when you say, I hear you talking about you building out a team. What would be some advice for building out a team and training and attracting the right people? And where have you found a lot of your people?
So with a team and finding the right people, it starts with your brand, because that's going to be your culture. So your culture will attract the right people. I would always raise up. And what I mean is, we have like our events that we do. We have the whole Next Gen family and community, right? We always pull from there. And the reason being, they've been around, they understand the movement, we've seen how they've shown up thus far. So it would always be people that have been in the space, and they've usually always been clients with us. And the reason being is they understand, right? And with our company, it's very unique because they're not W-2, they're 1099. So we see people that are doing really good with their company, and they're looking for, honestly, and this is kind of what it's been lately, is it's not necessarily about the income, it's about they're looking for that connection to do business with people, because most people don't have business partners, and I don't recommend it. It's hard enough to run a business, and I guarantee most business partnerships fail, especially in the beginning. And so it's like people that are wanting a team in business, those are the people I usually bring on my team and that I want. And then the biggest thing I look for, though, is are we all rowing the boat? Because that's my biggest struggle, is like, okay, that's great to have all these like team members, it's great to have all these people under me, it's great to say that, but the truth is it comes with a lot of weight, comes with a lot of accountability. When you can bring people that are rowing the boat, it doesn't get heavier to bring on new team members. We've built this massive, amazing ship of Next Gen. It's a working, amazing ship. We give people an opportunity to come and operate within that ship, right? They don't have to build this huge cruise ship like we already have. They can just come in and operate it. But it gets heavy having more bodies on the boat if we're not all pushing it forward, meaning we're not all bringing clients. We're not all, you know, pushing the mission forward and pushing the movement forward. And so that's the biggest thing, especially entrepreneurs in the beginning. A, find an assistant to take things off your plate so you can do what you do best. And then B, most of your like top four positions need to be people that also bring in leads. And it's commission based as well. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because it keeps them hungry. All of my team members that I have brought on salary, they don't bring in clients. But the ones that I don't put on salary, I put on commission and project, then they always bring in clients. And it keeps them hungry and it builds the movement together. They have ownership over it. It's not, and we never wanted to be it to be the Travis and Minky show. We don't want it to be that they show up to an event and it's like, oh, this is the Travis and Minky show. We show up to an event that we all contributed for people to be there. We all contributed to speak. We all contributed in creation of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. That you, I mean, I have heard, that, you know, you have team members and offer them some type of commission if they bring people on, but to even like kind of set that standard of like, hey, we all want to build this together.
Oh yeah, and I would do quarterly reviews. That will change the game for you. We always do a 90-day trial period, and then there's a review, and then we do quarterly reviews. How are you showing up on the team? What have you been contributing to the team? What have you received from this team? What can you do better? How many leads have you brought in? Especially with our company where everyone owns their own business, the truth is we bring in a massive amount of leads to service. So it's great that they just get a full clientele to service, but at the end of the day, are they building their teams? Are they still contributing to bringing in leads? Because at the end of the day, that's one of the crucial things of being a business owner. And that's one thing we've struggled with for years. It's like they walk into this golden goose of clientele and they're like, oh, this is great. I don't believe you're an entrepreneur at that point. I believe you're a glorified entrepreneur, but I don't think you are. You may have the identity and I may pay you like a 1099, but if you're not bringing in clients, you are missing one of the fundamental points of being an entrepreneur. And I've seen this happen early when we built our agency. People are like, oh, this is great, got overtly confident, and then they tried to leave us and take some of our clients, which we've protected ourselves against. But then after that, it was fine. If those clients want to leave, great. They left, and then that person failed in business within months because they didn't know how to actually convert a lead. And they didn't understand the power of a team. And you know, with my agency, like I'm a little bit ruthless with my people. Like I will pull them aside and I'm like, do you believe in this company? And of course they're like, yeah, yeah, of course, Minky. And I'm like, no, that's great. And I said, why do we do the branding and marketing together? And I don't want a generic answer that I've said on stage or said in an event. I want their truth. Especially like I pulled aside one of my designers and I said, why do we only do design work with the branding and with the marketing? Why do we not just sell logos for a couple $100? She's like, what? And I'm like, why? I want to hear it from you. Why not? Yeah. Do you believe in this process? Because for example, like I sell all of my team because I believe it's crucial. I believe you need photos just as much as you need video, just as much as you need design work. I believe my husband is an amazing branding expert, but at the end of the day, if he doesn't have the production end on the back end, it's not gonna work. And ultimately, all of those components are needed for me to be successful with people in marketing. I believe that to my core. But if I don't have people on my team believing that, they'll never bring leads to the whole team, right? We all feast together. We all service them together. That's why we built the team. And so I only want people that believe in the mission, believe what we do, believe why all the components go together. Because if they don't believe that, they'll never be able to bring in a lead. Like, it's very obvious what team members believe in it and which ones don't.
Yeah, I mean, that comes back to, like, that's how you convert people, mm-hmm. is if you really know the mission behind it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're just like, oh yeah, come get some
And bonus. You're convicted on it. Because if not, like, my designer would be like, oh yeah, we'll do a logo, that's fine. Make a couple $100. When in reality, through servicing our team, you get a couple grand for all the design work, and you get coaches, and there's all these other elements, which truly, when people need a brand, they don't need a logo. Mm-hmm. They need a whole, and you know that, like, they need a whole brand overview, and what Travis talked about with, like, all of their 4 W's figured out. They need more depth, otherwise the logo is just a band-aid to a bigger problem.
So who, like, you talk about some of these people that have come on board, mm-hmm. and then have left.
Yeah.
What type of people are those, like, designers? Are those coaches
underneath you? So it's always been production and coaches up until this point under us. So coaches within, like, the branding and the marketing, and then video, photo, design, and web. And so what that usually looks like is, like, someone comes on the team, and, like, really, I'm blessed. Like, we do not have a high turnover. Like, the average time I think the shortest amount of time people stay is, like, 2 years. And then we've had people on our team for, like, 7. So, and, like, still going, like, they've been there since the inception of Next Gen. And so the truth is, like I said, I think they get overly confident. And it's very interesting. My team members that have stayed the longest, they struggled before they met us. Meaning they struggled in their business before they met us, and we personally helped them in their business. They saw the results, which is why they believe in it, versus the ones that have only stuck around for a few years. It's because they got trained up within our company and we helped them start their company, and they immediately started doing well with us. So they didn't know the struggle. That's why we usually won't work with people that, even like on a client basis, that haven't struggled for at least a year to 2 years. There's a level of humility and appreciation that they're not ready to hear it. And that struggle is I think what people need. Like, and I'm blessed that I didn't have to, I mean, I struggled my own, but I didn't struggle in business super hard in the beginning, but I still knew the power of a lead because I had to fill my own business, right? I knew what it took. Like you said, I'm a people person, so I was naturally good at that. But people that have walked into a full clientele with Next Gen, they don't last. Because they just think leads are easy, clients are easy.
Yeah, and, like, you gave them that transformation too.
Yep.
So they're more loyal to you.
Yep.
Have you ever heard of the story of the, what is it, the caterpillar? They're like,
which one? Does he turn into a butterfly?
Yeah. Pretty remarkable story. But what's the one I'm thinking of? Okay, so this is what it is. So when there's a lot of struggle with the caterpillar turning into a butterfly. Mm-hmm. But if someone were to come over and see that struggle and just open it up, it literally would kill the butterfly because then it wouldn't have the wings. It's like the struggle is the strength.
It's the same thing with, like, most, like, egg-based animals, like ducks and everything. Like, part of their growth and development is being able to break out of that shell.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if they just broke it up, it would have killed them.
Yep.
So that's interesting that you bring that up. Mm-hmm. What's that, you say you're wanting to build up the team more.
Yeah.
Like, what are the type of people that you're looking for at this moment?
Honestly, at this point, like, our events are doing really, really well, and I love our events. Like, we have people that are, and this is actually a unique position within our company. So I have people that interview speakers for my stage. I used to do all the interviews. I'm having clients within our Next Gen network that come on our team. Like, we have Jessie Lockhart. She's amazing. She does fitness. She's came on our team. She interviews leads for me just like a couple hours a week to see if they're a good fit to speak on the stage. She knows what I'm looking for. She's amazing. But they also turn into leads for her personal training company. So I'm able to give her a lead database that we use kind of for speakers to make more connections, because that's where I figured that most people are struggling, is making those initial connections. And we have anywhere from 15 to 20 like a day coming in to speak on our stages. And so like I had this infinite amount of leads of people wanting to speak on our stages. I need someone to interview them, but then at the same time, she gets to make connections. Mm-hmm. And what she does is so unique. So she gets to actually just connect with people while servicing the team. And then I obviously compensate her monetarily very well for it. Mm-hmm. Like she makes easily $5,000+ a month, an event off of it. So it's great side income while generating and connecting more leads. So that's a position we're growing out. That's people of all industry. There's a girl that does real estate. She's wanting to come do it too, just to make more connections, connect with high level speakers. They value the connections because they've struggled in business. So they value the leads that we have come in and they're willing to interview them to get compensated. But more importantly, just to make the connections for potential leads for them as well. Mm-hmm. So that, and then growing out, obviously video, photo, and even design. I just brought on 2 new designers in the last 3 months, and I've got to bring on at least 3 more. So it's just everly growing, just of servicing people in those areas. And honestly too, I think the hardest thing is finding someone to replace me has been hard. Mm. Of like someone that I believe has the passion and has the tenacity to want to continue to learn. Because a lot of what social media, like I've invested in a lot, but most of the stuff I've learned was by implementing myself and being intuitive. And so I need someone that thinks the same way I do and is wanting to do that, right? And then Travis, it's like he wants to find someone to want to help clients with branding, that wants to go through his process and actually implement it, that believes in it, right? And so that's where it's a little bit harder position, because at that point, they would be successfully doing it on their own. They wouldn't need to come in with the team. And so it's this balance of finding exactly who we want in that position that we feel like would be good, that can service our clients to the level that we want. Cause that's a big trust too, that like I struggle with. I'm like, okay, like my high level clientele, I'm trusting you just to take care of them, and take care of them as in like double their investment back dollar for dollar. Cause that's usually like the commitment we make to our clients. That's a huge trust. So can you make it worth the agency's time to do that? So there's a lot of growth that has to happen there. But ultimately, for the multiple 7-figure mark, that's what has to happen. So, yeah, it's, you know, and I remember, though, bringing on my first team member, I felt this way. And I was like, oh, good Lord, I don't know how that's going to go. Yeah. And so, you know, you struggle through it and you grow and you learn. And one thing with my team is like, I always tell them, like, I'm learning, like, I want you to respect me, obviously, but like I'm trying to be a better leader for you. And that's always like the balance is like vulnerability while still getting respect from your team, especially because usually like I'm younger than the team members. Usually like that's just how it is. And so it's like, how do you get respect? But I've been in that position my whole life. Like even when I was a trainer, I was working at a high level gym that like they were double my age, they had master's degrees, and like who am I, right? Who am I? Like my assistant is, God, more than double my age, but she's the best person. Like she kind of is a maternal figure for me, but she helps me be a better leader while still respecting me as the owner of the company and the visionary of the company. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, wow, that was a lot. I feel like I should have a notepad here.
Are you building your team now? Mm-hmm. What's your next steps for your company and building out your team?
Really building out the whole hiring process and training people. That was even like my intention coming into Growth House. Mm-hmm. It was like, how do I train people better? Cause this is all very new to me. It was like my first time actually building a real company and hiring people. So all the stuff I do is very intuitive myself too. And I'm like,
how do you replace that? See, yeah.
I feel like I'm kind of a unicorn in a sense, and I know that you can't hire a unicorn.
I know. I'm like, fuck. I'm like, I'm just so good. How are we going to replace me? I don't even think 5 will do the job. Like, I'm good.
Yeah. But for me, it was really figuring out, like, actually systematizing everything and being like, okay, this is step 1 and this is step 2. It's not just go do this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you've been systematizing everything, and then are you bringing coaches on under you?
Not coaches yet. I mean, it's all within the video production right now.
That's so awesome.
Actually just hired a couple editors yesterday.
Yeah.
And then we're starting to venture out into finding some new writers and new producers. Once we get that all handled, then then we start venturing into the coaching realm a little bit more.
Well, I've got connections for you that within my network, I know we're good people that do a lot of copywriting. That would be good, especially if you're looking for writers. And then even like, see, this is the beautiful part about it. Like even the people on my production team, like with video, they're 1099. Like I've trained them up. I've already done the hard work. Feel free to utilize them. They're great, right? And so it creates opportunities for them to connect with other networks to be able to help with that as well.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. Mm-hmm. All right, a couple just last quick questions before we close up. I mean, we could even talk about this if this is more of a longer answer, but I have been curious because I remember the first time I met Travis, he was asking me if I wanted to speak at one of your events. Mm-hmm. And you just mentioned something about how you guys have people speaking, and it's, what is that model? Like, I'm curious about that.
So with our events, we have a filled room of like across the nation, people fly in. Like we've been doing events going on 7 years. So our events have a very well-known reputation. We do 10 a year. That being said, with our events, we have anywhere from 75 to 150 like entrepreneurs in the room. And so, you know, early on, we're like, okay, like we'll just talk the entire time for 2 days. But then we realized at the end of the day, we don't help everyone with everything. And our events do really, really well. They're all successful people and it's great. And we're like, why don't we give other people the opportunity to speak in front of these audiences? And so that's how we worked it there, is we actually give the opportunity for people to panel and keynote on our stage. So they get access to come to the event for free, network, as well as speak on stage. We position them, we endorse them. That's why there's an extensive interview process. There's an application, there's an hour interview, and there's multiple meetings prior, because I don't want just anyone on my stage. And we actually pay our speakers to speak too. Oh. So, I mean, the model really works that, you know, we pay based off network and experience, meaning our goal with bringing like people on our stage is we don't help everyone with everything, and we want them to benefit from our network. We know other people that do this. Most people that allow you to speak on their stage, they want 30% of whatever you end up converting from the event. We're not that way. We say whatever you get from the event, great. Like we're happy we could make you the connection. We're happy we can make you the referral. Our events though, we actually don't sell at. No one's allowed to sell from stage. We don't sell our programs. They range 5,000 to 100,000. We don't sell them on stage and we don't talk about them. That's why our culture has been built so well. It's all on genuine connection. And then the sales can happen after the event. The conversions can happen after the event. So with our model, the way we do it is like we give our speakers discounted tickets for each person that they invite to the event, and then they get paid $200 per person. So our speakers could invite literally 5 people that get to come for a discount. So our ticket cost is $1,000 for 2 days. You could get 750 off, and then 200 of that goes to my speaker. So it covers my bare minimum cost to have people in the room covering my venue and materials. The rest goes back to you. So if you invited 5 people, you're literally getting paid to speak and in the room for free and marketed, and we promote you across our platforms while also getting clients. And so that's kind of like the model that we've developed that I've yet to see anyone do that's been absolutely killing it. And then too, you know, that is our goal. We just want to connect with more people. We want to grow the next gen movement.
Yeah.
So it makes sure that you're winning while we're winning. I call it a win-win-win. It's a win for you, it's a win for us, and it's a win for the people coming. They get a discount, we want to grow the next gen movement, and then you're getting paid to speak, clients, and access to all of our network.
Yeah. Wow, that's a win.
That's why we have a lot of applicants.
Yeah, and I just, like, because, you know, just from my perspective, and, you know, when someone says, hey, you want to speak, like, right away, you're kind of like, your interest peaks a little bit more rather than just like, hey, you want to come pay for a ticket to come to my event?
Oh, for sure. And I love it. And, you know, it's been really good too, because, like, there's people like you, like, maybe you haven't spoken on a million different stages, but you have an amazing built network. That I actually care more about. I can help you be a better speaker. You can share your story amazing. My goal is growing the next gen movement. And so I think it really just does depend on the event and what their goal is, right? And so it's like, it gives opportunities, especially even for new business owners, to have an opportunity to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's powerful. I mean, I think speaking is one of the best things.
Mm-hmm.
I've always wanted to do it. So it's like that goal in itself.
Yep.
But anybody I've spoken to that has actually spoke and is being honest, I don't think there's a single person that speaks and is not nervous to speak.
Really? I don't get nervous, and I'm not lying. I don't.
Really?
I don't know what is wrong with me. I don't, and I never have. And it's hard because like,
are you excited?
No. I think I know I will get nervous, which is why I just go like, not non-emotional, but I don't go there. I suffer from a lot of anxiety, but I don't with speaking. I don't know why. Other than honestly, you know, actually I do know why. Because the moment that I start to feel any emotion, so maybe you are right, there is nervousness there, but the moment I start to feel that, it's truly like what is true influence. And it's not how I can get them to feel about me, it's how I can make them feel about themselves. So when I enter into a space of like, how is what I'm gonna say make them feel about themselves? How is this gonna make it feel about this? It puts me in a different state that I just don't care about it. And I've been bullied my whole life. So I'm like, I'm actually like really pretty now and successful. So I'm kind of like, people can't say shit. Like they could say shit before. Like I was very overweight. I had acne. I had shagged hair all over my face. Like I was a walking, making fun of stick when I was growing up. Like it was bad. But now I think probably too, I'm like, I've been through the bottom. So I'm like, there's nothing that you can say me that can break me. I will say the one stage I got nervous on, you are right. All right, Nick, you're right. You're right. You called me on my shit. Wait, yeah, you're right. Okay?
I can't hear you.
I know. You are right. I got invited to speak on a yacht party. Ooh. Yeah, in Miami. And they were all millionaires attending. You could not attend unless you were a millionaire. I am not a billionaire. And some of the speakers were. And I was like, what the fuck am I going to say? I'm only making seven figures. So I'm like, what am I going to teach to people that are all in the seven figures? And that was like, I stayed in my hotel the whole night before. And I was like, I struggled. I was like, what the fuck value am I going to provide? Like, I'm usually one of the most successful people in the room, which is probably why I don't get nervous. Is I'm like, I'm one of the most successful in the room in most rooms that I'm in. And so being on this stage, I was like, oh Lord, what value do I provide? And I realized, you know, as I looked at like, okay, what am I coming to teach? I do know more about influence than most of these people. Most of the guys in the room, they were old money, meaning they didn't have a social media presence. They didn't know how to be a public figure online. Most of them wanted to hire me afterwards of the other speaker lineup. And I was like, fuck, you make like $200 million a year and you're telling me you want to hire me? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, okay. Because he didn't have a social media presence. He didn't know how to market himself online to actually convert, and he didn't have his personal brand. And so I think it's really just owning your craft. Like, I don't know how to scale a business to 200 mil because I haven't done it for myself yet. And it's funny, like, he actually ended up hiring us, and I'm flying to Utah. That's the part I didn't tell you, to meet with him. And he's like, yeah, he's like, I'll just meet with you for free. Let's talk about scaling your business to the couple hundred mil. I'm like, oh good Lord, I don't know if I'm ready for that conversation. But it was also how I felt my first coaching session ever about business.
Yeah.
So yeah. I will say that that's probably like my biggest flex is why I don't get so nervous.
That's interesting. And I guess like, I don't know, we could probably talk for hours.
Yeah, we probably could.
But like, that was gonna be my question is like, why don't you get nervous? And then my, like when you finally said I that, why do you get nervous?
And maybe that's too much of an ego hit for me, but I've been poor. So like, I know the grind, and I have a lot of respect for myself of the hustle I've put in to get where I'm at. So it's like at the end of the day, like this is, sounds terrible, but like even with like haters online, I'm like, they're fucking poor. Like they're not doing anything with their life. And not that money is everything, but it's like, as much money as I've made, I've influenced that many people. So like, what the fuck are they doing with their life, right? And so I think I have that like probably ego flex in my soul where I'm just like, what are you doing with the world? Because I've never had someone more successful than me or even making over six figures ever tear me down, ever. And so I kind of know that in the back of my soul that I'm like, I know my worth and I know where I'm at, especially because usually they're business spaces that I speak in.
Well, you keep saying success.
Mm-hmm.
What is success to you?
I think I've usually defined it by monetary, and that's probably been one of my biggest struggles, even with becoming a mom, is because I was raised by two very successful entrepreneurs, and like my parents weren't around a lot of the time. And so I kind of paired my worth to a dollar amount. And I've even seen me do that in my marriage. Like if Trav and I are like not getting along in business, but then I'll go close like 75K in a day. I'll be like, babe, look what I did. And he's like, still pissed. I'm like, what? what?
Did you not see that?
I know, I'm like, did you not see that? And like, but that's not his definition of success, right? And so I think there's like success in where like my value is. I'm really, really good at making money and helping people make money. And so I think that's where too, like I've had to find a lot of success within motherhood, which like if you see me in mom mode, I'm completely different. Mm-hmm. I am kind of a space cadet. I'm gonna be really honest. If you ask me any intellectual question, like I'm there, but like I couldn't talk to you the way I am now. Like it's a completely different Minky and it's a completely different mode. And I will say like, it's hard to always want to go back into that because it's a yin and a yang balance, which yeah. we briefly talked about, yeah. right? So like my success as a yin is motherhood. I've always wanted to be a mom. Like that was like my biggest dream when I was living in my car, like I wanted to be a mama. And so that would be my biggest success there. And then business, I would say, honestly, the influence and the income and being able to make both and being able to help clients make both, like that's where like I just get so excited. Like even today in particular, like this doesn't happen every day, but I had three people message me saying like they doubled their income this year, and like it just made me emotional. And I sent it to my team and I was like, guys, this is what matters. This is why we do what we do. And like I always screenshot them and I put them in a folder and I'm like, these are my client wins. Like these are, this is why I do it. This is the success of what NextGen was created. Like our company was created to help more people be successful. So it's not necessarily about how like us hitting our goals this year, but like are people hitting their goals? Are people able to be successful within our program? And so like seeing the success, like it's been an ever fine tuning process. Like you understand with the production side, with everything, like fine tuning it, it takes years. And I finally am like in the last year, I'm just like, holy hell, like this is a $1 billion company. And like, that's the conversation is taking it nationwide. Like that's a lot. And like even purchasing other companies is what we're looking at now. We're buying a franchise next year of one of my mom's super successful companies out of Utah because we see how big it's getting and it's franchising. And we want to have like the Maricopa County in Arizona because we know it's going to take off. So there's just a lot there, but yeah, I would say honestly, my yin is being a mom. Like that's my biggest success. And then my yang is honestly, weirdly enough, like my relationship on top of how much we've been able to create together.
Special what you guys have done.
It's a lot, but it's great.
But the thing I would say, like, you know, you take those screenshots of those client wins and that's mm-hmm. like, that's the impact yeah. that you're making. And I guess I would encourage you to anytime you do have another opportunity where you are speaking in front of people that are quote unquote more successful than you, like think about that impact. Mm-hmm. Like I think something that's really profound that helps anybody is realizing that we can all learn something from somebody.
Yeah.
And we can all learn from something from everybody. Mm. No matter if you've made $200 million or you've made $1, like you can always, like some of the stuff I've learned from people that, I went to this conference, not a conference, a workshop a while ago that was it's like an emotional intelligence program. Completely like cracked me open and it was like the most impactful thing. And probably the person I learned the most from was a kid in like 19 that just smoked weed and played video games all day. Like someone I would never associate with, but it's just like that continued to solidify that like you can learn something from everybody.
That's powerful. I love that. I mean, you look at like the amount of like billionaires that like spend a day with a homeless guy or whatever and like just like the lessons they learn. And I think I forget about those foundations. And I think, you know, when we talk about, you know, and maybe it goes back to when stepping on like those higher level stages, is it's not so much about like successes, it's more about the experiences. The truth is, I've lived in my car. I've pulled myself out from that. I've been divorced. I've gone through this. I've had zero followers and I've had thousands overnight, right? And so it's like there's valid experiences there no matter what measure that can help people.
Yeah. Well, I think this is a perfect way to segue into my final question that I always like asking.
Okay.
Maybe this will even help you think about success in a different way.
I like it.
What are people saying at your funeral?
Hopefully that I'm funny. I try to be funny, and if people don't laugh, I'm like, really? honestly, hopefully that I try to be extremely inclusive and make people feel feel very loved and just wanting to help them undoubtedly. Like, that's one thing. Like, I wake up and I have at least 30 messages. I'm in an hour meeting and I have at least 70 messages, and I make sure to reply to them every single day. And it's like, you know, I want people to always feel like they're important no matter what level. And if they reach out to Minky, like, they're going to get a reply. And so I would hope that they would just feel that they're important to someone, because I know what it's like to not feel important. Yeah. And just that I really loved them and I helped them be more and think more. I know a lot of people tell me, you know, at your young age, you make me feel behind, but you also help put a fire to my ass that, like, my age shouldn't hold me back. Or, like, that I can do things no matter what. And so I'd hope that they would just feel inspired and, yeah.
I love that.
You can only hope, right? I'm going to have to fake my death to see. Just to see. Well, that would be epic. I wonder how many people actually do that. Do you think people actually do that?
Their death to see what people are saying?
Yes. To see, like, okay, now you're thinking about your, all right, next TV show. I'm surprised there isn't a TV show.
Huh.
It makes you,
question. Very egotistical to say, to like want to fake your death and then everyone says.
It's just very curious. It's like, that would be so sad.
You go and you're like,
the emotional pain. Anything. I feel like you would get sued for emotional torment there. That is terrible. Oh, that's really sad. I didn't think about like my husband and my kids. Like, that would be so sad. But no, I on a serious note, I really do hope that, you know, they speak highly and they think highly, and there's good memories, because, you know, I'm not perfect, but at the end of the day, like, we all do our best every single day.
That's all we can do.
Yep, 100%.
I love that answer. I want you to keep on thinking on that. And when you do, like, have those inevitable times that are going to continue to come up where you're speaking on yachts or on top of mountains or whatever it is next, it's like, think on that. It's like, that is the value that you're bringing, that you're making people feel inclusive, mm-hmm. and important, not the fact that they've made 10x more money than you have.
Yep. It's true. Anyway, I love
my
that.
Two cents.
I love that. No, all comes back around. I love it. Thank you.
So, you want last message or anything else to share with the audience?
Yeah, just, I mean.
Or how can they connect with you?
Yeah, Minky on Instagram, MINKY on Facebook. It's just Minky Brady, MINKYBRADY. Please connect with me. Like I said, like, I like to be connected with people. Like, I like them to message me, like, say, hey, I listened to the podcast. Like, I want to get to know you better. Like, I follow people back. Like, I want to stay connected in every way. Especially because, like, I wouldn't be where I'm at if someone didn't unveil my influence. And so I've made it my personal mission to help as many people as possible unveil their influence. So whether that's coming to an event, working together on a bigger scale, like, I want to help as many people as I can.
Yeah. Love it. Any last words?
No.
Well, thanks for being on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Alrighty, my friend, thank you so much for listening to that episode of the Just Grow podcast. Truly appreciate your time. If you did enjoy this particular episode, make sure and share it with just at least one friend that could get some value out of it, that can help their life, could help them grow in some fashion or format. Now, if you are interested in expediting your dreams, your goals, you want to get on the charter jet instead of the commercial flight to your dreams, head on over to justgrowvisions.com, where people are making more money, they're losing more weight, they're getting in better relationships, you name it, it's helping them get there quickly. So head on over to justgrowvisions.com. Make sure and check out the link, all the links in the video description or the show notes. Appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you on the next video.